Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to an American Thanksgiving edition of the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos in my stretchy pants, and that's Bob Mackowitz in all his pants, which often seem stretchy. Hi, Bob.
That was an unnecessary shot at
me, Matt. It really was.
I was just kind of sitting here waiting to talk, and I got speed bagged even before we didn't even get out of minute one, and there was an attack.
Now, it was actually honestly not about physical aesthetic, just more out of sometimes, you know, just your casualness of clothing.
I have a lax attitude towards fashion. Yeah. While I'm at home, I think that I can, you know, yeah. I like to dress up as much as the next guy.
That
probably more, since the next guy hates it.
Yeah.
But at home, this is my castle, and we're doing it at my place today. So how's it look? Is it clean enough for you?
Yep. It is quite clean. The floor is almost devoid of toys. I'd say, though, the one thing, your couch by the window, The pillows look unloved. Like, your pillows look like, or your cushions look like, you own 95-pound dogs.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, they're a bit crumpled up, but that's because I guess we don't run an Airbnb, so I don't need to present the couch to strangers.
Do you know we're no longer doing the shared Airbnb?
Really? Why?
Yeah, the condo board eventually came down where they finally said, yeah, eventually if there's enough complaints, lawyers will be involved. And once lawyers get involved, then you have to ask yourself the question, do you want to do that fight? Because to do that fight, minimum $5,000-$7,000 is what you're looking at.
Do they have the right to tell you what you can and can't do with your place?
In the rules, it was about you're not allowed to do short-term rentals, even though what we're doing is almost akin to having a friend stay over because we have to review. You do have to review before you let someone come. And
there's your
space.
Argument. You don't need a lawyer. It's like having a friend stay over for money.
For money.
But, see, so that's really, we're not renting the place. We're having a friend stay over and donate the cash. A friend we've never met and advertised to bring by.
Ah, but here's this. When you have a party, sometimes people bring other people over and you don't know who they are. For us with shared Airbnb, we had rating systems. We had a resume. In fact, I would say people, I've had parties where I've known far less about some of the guests that have come over than my Airbnb people. But in the end, I think it was just about money. So.
It always is, Matt. I just finished watching season 3 of Narcos, and if I've learned anything from those narco-terroristas, it's all about the Benjamins.
By the way, big difference between the barista and the terrorista.
The terrorista. I don't even know if terrorista is a word. I kind of just made it up.
Similar
I was looking
sounding.
For something that sounded like I'd actually watched it, which I have, but, you know, my attention span. Yeah. And my track pants.
Yes.
Which I don't even think you own. You don't own a pair of track pants.
No.
I feel like for Christmas, would one listener with too much cash and time on his hands or her hands buy Matt a pair of track pants?
Don't. Yeah, there's really no
Would point. You wear them?
No, because
if someone put like Macko and Cos on the butt?
No, because no. Oh, God, no. Not that I don't want to highlight my ass because it's fantastic. It's more, it's just not me. And I'm 42. At this point, I'm kind of set in my ways, and I figure I'm going to start doing the track pants thing after I hit like my mid-70s. So I got like 30 more years before track pants start becoming part of my life.
Got a lot of Leafs takeaways to get to, plus Leafs in 6. We're doing listener questions today.
Yep.
Coming up, and our top five surprisingly good SNL hosts. And I was thinking, you know, Matt.
Hold on. The list was supposed to be just, it was actually, if you go back and listen, most unusual hosts for SNL.
I guess I kind of assumed they would have to be good. Like, what would be the point of, we talked about Chance the Rapper being really good.
He was awesome. But the reason why I started this list was because the musical guest was someone in rap, in Eminem.
Yes.
So usually they're not going to double up because they've had hosts like Drake has hosted before, but usually there'd be a contrast. And since Chance the Rapper had never hosted before, him suddenly hosting when the musical guest was also hip hop, I'm like, I thought, huh, that's an unusual choice. But you know what? We'll be able to blend it, Bob, because both of us, we all about improv. We'll make it work.
Well, I also thought, just so the top five stop being about 35 minutes long, maybe just whoever comes up with the topic should do one and the other person should critique. So it doesn't actually become top 10 because it's two top fives.
Well, maybe if some people did a little less critiquing and a little bit more listening, we wouldn't be here.
Well, if some people stuck to the rules and came up with good lists, maybe somebody wouldn't have to critique
some
so much.
Some people listened to how it was. Anyway, you want to get to the takeaways?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Let's start. Do you want to start at least in six just to get into it, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So they lose last night to Florida in a shootout. Mm-hmm. My Leafs in six is here comes the grind. Buckle in. Mm-hmm. A classic mid-November on the road in Florida. Hard to care about this game. And this is where you remember after the first flush.
Yep.
I'm going to go get the phone. You know what? I'm going to see who this is. Someone's calling. Wait a minute. Damn it. Hang on. I'll be right back.
Here's the thing that's annoying. Bob almost never picks up his phone. It's almost universal that if you call Bob Mackiewicz, you're not going to get him. You're going to get an answering machine. And often it's an answering machine message that is like from like so many years ago. Hi, this is Bob Mackiewicz from Off the Record. Please leave your name and number.
It was just some telemarketer. Oh. And I wanted a chance to shame them. I don't know why. I just felt it in this moment. But it didn't happen.
I feel bad for telemarketers.
Have you ever done it? I did it once.
Oh, I'd be horrible at it. I would call up and go, hey, I'm really sorry. Never mind. And I wouldn't even do my pitch.
It was like teaching English in the mid-90s. Like, it was just a rite of passage. If you were if you were graduating university in the 90s, you had to be a telemarketer. Because there weren't really a ton of jobs. We were sort of at the tail end of a recession. Mm-hmm. So, actually, that kind of saved my life in a lot of ways. Because there was no way to go mainstream. Because there was no mainstream to go into.
Yeah.
So you just kind of had to follow your path. All right. So, yes, here comes the grind. Buckle in. There's going to be a lot of games that are going to feel like 2-1 shootout losses to Florida in the near future.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I got a couple. A surprisingly fun goalie battle tonight.
Yeah, that's good. Very true.
You know, 42 shots each. Both Luongo and Anderson look great. And that sort of goes to my next one because there were chances. This wasn't just neutral zone. And so my other two Leafs in six.
Like the Phantom Zone from the Superman comics?
I have a thought on the neutral zone. If Riley only had connected once, he had three gorgeous chances. One in the second set up by Matthews. Nope. One right at the end of the third where he hit the top crossbar. And then one in overtime. And then my final one, how does Bozak keep missing chances?
Wait a minute. Is that six words or just a takeaway? How does Bozak keep missing chances? That's seven.
No, that's six.
How does Bozak keep missing? Nope, you're right.
Yes, that is. Your ability to count. Oh, my
God.
That was pretty
bad. I actually used my fingers and got it wrong.
That's the worst part. You used your fingers and you still counted wrong. I feel bad for your daughter.
I was just going to say.
Do you help her with her math homework?
I do.
Daddy, what's 5 + 5? It's 55. Now leave me alone.
Just like A.C. Earl.
Yeah.
Double nickels. Drafted sixth out of Iowa.
Bozak always missed. There's always one or two glorious chances. We're like, oh, how did you miss that? So those are my...
4 + 4, 44, Morgan Riley. Morgan Come on, Riley. Kid. Why are you so bad at math?
There you go. I like what you did there. Yeah, that was a fun game. But Riley...
It was a fun game.
Yeah, Riley and Bozak missed chances. Riley, who was great, I think was the best player on the ice, had some chances.
Yep, goalie battle. I want to take this to my real takeaway, which is, can we just get rid of the shootout? The shootout has just become stupid and boring. Didn't you find when it got to the end of a three on three after 5 minutes that you were disappointed?
Oh, yeah.
Because now they had to stop and line up and do the shootout. Now, I know a few years ago this was exciting and progressive and daring, and it felt like the NHL was trying stuff. But
it's not anymore.
Look, 3-on-3 is so clearly better than the shootout. And I was watching last night and thinking, okay, you have two gimmicks now to end a game, which is like putting vanilla icing on top of chocolate icing on top of a cake. You don't double icing the cake. It's not necessary.
No, that's a good point. You don't double icing the cake.
Last night was a double icing cake. I was irritated watching. I thought this was a perfectly thrilling 3-on-3. And the arguments against extending it and making it just sudden death are stupid. I have not heard one compelling argument why 3-on-3 can't go until someone scores.
Yeah, because the thing is, I get how 5-on-5 could take forever to finally get that goal. But 3-on-3 eliminates a lot of the defense, and guys are going to be more tired. More tired equals more mistakes. More mistakes equals turnover equals goal. And you're right, because near the end of the 3-on-3, you're just like, oh, no. You're like, someone score. I don't even care if it's the other team because I don't want the shootout. The shootout, it's funny. Penalty shot, exciting. Shootout, boring.
The penalty shot used to be like a four-leaf clover. you know, you would be watching a game, there'd be a penalty shot. It would stand out over the course of an entire season. It'd be like, remember that game with the penalty shot?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it seems like about, what is it now? Like 15% of them wind up going to a series of penalty shots.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? I made up
and
that
they all suck. And by the way, why is it that NHL players suck at the shootout?
Like, I have
it's
no
at the
idea.
Point I am actually shocked when one of them goes in. And remember last year, this was a weird stat that the most talented teams in the NHL, like Washington, Toronto, and Pittsburgh, all were near the bottom in terms of shootout wins, while New Jersey and other crappy teams were near the top, which just shows that it's luck and fluke.
So teams, like, there was no correlation between
None.
Having a Skill, high octane yeah. offense with a winning the skills competition at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I started to think to myself, do you need a shootout specialist because there's so much riding on it? It's an entire point. At the end of the season, that point's the difference between a playoff seeding or not sometimes. It was last year for the Leafs.
Yeah.
So did you start needing to bring on a shootout specialist the way you would have a left-handed reliever that can get you one key out in a bullpen? I think the shootout has outlived its usefulness.
Yeah, good on you for trying it.
Absolutely. But the 3-on-3 is simply a better gimmick. I don't even mind ties. But if we're not going to have ties, at least have it be sudden death 3-on-3.
Yes. 3-on-3 throughout until you get it. Because here's the thing. It's still there to entertain us, the fans. And it is the most entertaining thing. And I'm addicted to it. I love 3-on-3. I'm giddy. And it's nothing against the normal game, which is often incredible. But the 3-on-3 is a special treat. So, yes, I agree with you.
Any other Leafs takeaways? Because I have one. Actually, I've got a new segment I want to debut.
Okay, I got a takeaway.
Okay, the Leafs. You go for it. Is it a Leafs one, though?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, it's
you
a
go.
Leafs one. And it's a theme of mine. And I say off the top, this one's going to be very unsatisfying because I don't have an answer.
Okay.
But teams that specialize in the neutral zone trap need to be fined. They need to have draft picks taken away. And the coach needs to be flogged. I don't know how we do this. I don't know how we monitor it or police it. But again, it's the end baseball with, oh, the starter can only go through the rotation twice. It's the only sport where the main focus is get rid of offense and exciting players. So that's it. Just a little mini one.
I like that. So is that more of a rant or a takeaway?
Yeah. A little from Dore.
I think the flogging
a little bit from Dore,
is a
little from
good
Dore.
Idea. Mm-hmm. Without the flogging, I don't think it'll really catch. Other sports have found ways to have things like illegal defense. Basketball has illegal defense.
But basketball juices offense. Football tries to juice offense. Hockey doesn't.
Right.
Actually.
But that's my point, is there are ways to police the game.
Yes.
You just say you're not allowed to take these kinds of defensive positions. Now, I don't know how you would do it in a game.
I don't know. That's
as fast as
I
Toronto.
Know.
As hockey. I just called hockey Toronto,
yeah.
Which may be the most Toronto-centric thing of
Sorry.
All time. I ain't apologizing for it.
You know,
waited
also,
a long time for this team.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, you know what? That's a common theme here. About I'm not apologizing, and we've waited a long time. For everyone,
I called hockey Toronto.
Don't worry about it, Bob. We'll let it go. For everyone who complains about all the roster basin talk and the line combo talk, here's my message to you. Remember what it used to be. 3 years ago, we were debating about a miscast franchise savior, sometimes disinterested Kessel. We were wondering about a woefully ill-equipped number one center in Bozak, a raw Kadri, an oft-injured Lupo, an overpaid Clarkson, future trade chips in Santarelli and Winnick. And hey, wait a minute. Are you telling me that Grabner played 80 games, averaged 15 minutes a night, and got 18 points? He had 80 games and only had 18 points? So to everyone wondering why we talk about different line combinations, it's because there's so much talent here, and I will not apologize.
All right. We weren't really talking about line combinations, though.
No.
It was a wonderful filibuster.
Yeah.
I suspect some of it may have been pre-written, but there's no shame in that.
It was. It was pre-written for this.
But we weren't really addressing what you said you refused to apologize for. We could.
I was playing on the theme of you saying we've waited a long time for this.
Oh, I see. Okay, well.
And then I jammed in something I wrote.
So I put 100%. This out on Twitter this morning just to see, random sample poll. And the question was, Babcock is putting the Leafs lines through the blender a lot. Is this a sign of A, creativity, or B, overthinking? What do you think won?
Ooh, well, the Leafs lost, so I'm going to go overthinking.
Correct. 55% have overthinking, 45% have creativity.
Love you, fans.
He's really smart, and sometimes I wonder, and this is like a non-scientific thing, but you get this with NFL coaches sometimes. Like, Mike Martz may have been the king of this with his offensive playbook. How much thinking do you actually need to do before you're just roster baiting yourself out there?
Yes.
Like Marner, Matthews, Hyman. Just put them out there and they'll score.
It's been a long road trip. I haven't seen the family. Can you really attack me for wanting to roster bait every now and then? I mean, we've been on the West Coast for a long time.
The problem is, Matt, the title does appear on the bill when you do it during a hockey game. We all get to discuss it later.
That rosterbation movie was 1995? That's nuts.
And if I stop halfway through, I have to buy it again? That's ridiculous.
Good for you for making it halfway through.
If you wanted to bury state secrets, you should probably put it at the end of a porno movie.
Oh, my God, that's true. No one would ever see it.
Who would ever know? Who would ever see it?
Oh, my God, that's funny. I do want the Real Zapruder film. No one saw it.
Here is a long list of government officials directly responsible for the JFK assassination.
Yep. Getting back to it.
Back to rosturbation, yes.
Right, well, back to Babcock. I would rather him overthink in November. So in May, he's being praised for his creativity. Yeah. That's an answer.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. Matt actually just did the... I think you actually patted yourself on the back. Who was the wrestler who used to pat himself on the back?
Was that Iron Mike Sharp?
The Brooklyn Brawler, Johnny Canine? I think it was Johnny Canine. Mm. Somebody tweet us. We should know this answer. Yeah. Somebody always used to pat himself on the back.
Not Mr. Perfect. Anyway, sorry. Continue your point on Babcock and the
list. All right, so here's what my new segment. It's called... For takeaways, it's called the Goldilocks takeaway. I've got to take, and you tell me if it's too hot, too cold, or just right.
Just right.
Just right, okay. So after the game, Babcock was talking about Marner and Matthews probably being separated from this point on.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really interested in seeing that line go forward. And I thought it was interesting. There was a couple reasons that came up. One was the stuff we talked about the other day about maybe Nylander is a better scorer and Marner is more of a playmaker. And so Matthews benefits from having a greater scoring threat on his wing. He did mention that. But he also talked a little bit and kind of alluded to maybe he should split up Matthews and Marner so they can drive separate lines as opposed to just being concentrated on one shift. And I kind of took that as a comment about William Nylander in a way. And you tell me if this is too hot, too cold, or just right. When you suggest that a guy doesn't necessarily drive his line, like Marner does, but Nylander doesn't, is that suggesting that he sees Marner as someone that you build a line around more than he would, say, a William Nylander? You always talked about how Marner was the veteran whisperer.
Yes.
And last year he was able to get a hell of a lot out of JVR.
And Bozak.
Is this kind of a quiet suggestion that he just can't put in his mind Nylander anywhere and that line is going to be taken care of, but he can do that with Marner?
It's a good...
Too hot, too cold, just right.
I know just right, and I'm going to add this to it. Wasn't originally Nylander supposed to be a center?
That was the next point.
Wasn't he supposed to be the one eventually? Like, you know when a band splits up because both want to form their own bands? Well, Nylander is yet to form his own band.
We're waiting for the Nylander solo project.
Yeah, exactly. He's still the lead guitar. You know, he's the lead guitarist, but... You know, it's still Mick Jagger belting out the tunes.
And maybe he doesn't see him as a center. Maybe he doesn't see him as that. Now, this is why I would say, is it too hot, too cold, just right? Because it's kind of jumping to conclusions. I did think it was interesting, though, that he suggested that the greater balance would happen if Marner was playing away from Matthews, kind of backhandedly suggesting that's not the case if Nylander is playing away from Matthews.
Yeah. We were debating this a lot today on TSN just about how long will Matthews and Marner and one of the Babcock quotes was he liked Nylander with Matthews because Nylander can score more.
And well, so, that was it, yeah, right? He's more of a scoring threat. He's got Marner's the bigger shot.
Marner's better at driving a line. Yeah,
and Marner is kind of emblematic of a new position that's starting to come in hockey, which is the point forward.
Yeah.
The guy who actually drives the play, but from the forward position. It's always been the center was thought of as the playmaker and the wings were thought of as the finisher. That was a more traditional distribution of offense. But I think we've seen there's a hell of a lot of forwards now who are so skilled, they can run the play.
Marner looked really frisky with Austin Matthews. And it's kind of like, Matthews is kind of like the first date. You know, you're going back
to this dating analogy with these guys.
You're going to clean everywhere, and you're going to have your best stories ready for that, for the first date.
Well, they like each other, obviously. Yeah. Like, they're pals off the ice. They've mentioned this a lot. They talked about how excited they were about to show that chemistry on the ice. I think this is Babcock overthinking it a bit. They should probably let these guys have a bit more run. Mm-hmm. It's a small, small sample size to say this isn't working for us.
Yeah.
And I would like to see what happens. I think that Hyman has proved that he deserves to be up there. I guess if you wanted to make it Martin, you could make it Martin. They've had some click there. But I don't know that shuffling up lines constantly over and over again is going to yield anything other than guys who don't get a chance to play together, figure out each other's ticks and quirks and so on and so forth.
I'll go back to my original one. Overthink now while you can. Make sure that you're a genius come late in the first round of the playoffs.
And in fairness to your point, it's not like he hasn't had time to see these lines, because they almost didn't move for 2 years. Yeah. Certainly last year.
Yeah, no.
Last year there was no movement.
Like Johnny Unitas' haircut, you could set your watch.
Watch by it.
Yeah. By the way, I wonder if the Nylander conversation would be any different if he hadn't scored against New Jersey with 2.5 seconds left on a shift where he was tired.
I don't have the stats in front of me, but
not, if he doesn't have that goal,
how long is it without a goal?
Then it's like 14, 15 games. Yeah. The narrative, you know, if one 5-second burst doesn't happen, what's the narrative today?
So where are we on the Nylander criticism meter? Because I feel every time you have this conversation about William Nylander, some defensive Leafs fan says, why do you keep picking on him? So where are we today?
We're
6 out of 10.
I'm gonna go 5, only because Luongo was great last night. So you can hide behind the, hey, Luongo had a fantastic game, you know. So I'm gonna go a little bit lower. But Leafs got back to back, playing Friday against Carolina, Saturday against Washington. If not much from Nylander, come Monday, that gets a little bit higher.
So do you have any other takeaways? Because I got one more hockey one, but if you've got something else.
No, go another hockey. Anything else I have is not about the NHL.
All right. So last night was an example of why the NHL really sucks.
Okay.
So last night you had, in the NHL, Montreal versus Nashville.
Yep.
And in your mind, what does that mean?
Weber and Subban.
Now, in fairness, Weber wasn't playing. He was out. But yeah. Still, you've got these two teams like that will forever be linked because of that deal. Mm-hmm. And you even had Subban earlier in the day doing an interview where he talked about how there wasn't really any meaningful contract negotiation with him before the trade. It just looked like
no one came to him about marketing or charity work. Like, he had to do that all on his own.
There was a brilliant quote in there about how he would try to do things differently. He couched it in a general sense, but you could tell he was talking about himself. And the team would be like, well, John Beliveau didn't do it this way. And that the team had done certain things a certain way for like 100 years.
Yeah.
And they didn't know how to deal with them. So it's perfect, right? Like, how much hockey dynamite is there in terms of storylines, really? This might be number one. On the same night, Golden State versus Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Durant and Westbrook going at it.
Yeah.
Both served up with technicals.
Yep.
Westbrook dying to get a triple-double, finishing just one assist off the pace. Short, yeah. And you can actually see the clip at the end of the game. He passes to Steven Adams, and Steven Adams doesn't take the shot. And you hear him yelling, shoot! Because he wants to be able to stick the triple-double in KD's face.
Yeah.
So one league is all about, well, you know, it's just another game and we're going to play hard and I don't even look at the names on the backs of the jerseys. And the other one is, yeah, they hate each other. They hate each other because it's personal and there was bad feelings. You got, you know, people from Westbrook's family saying, I don't know if these guys will ever be friends again. And I looked at this and I thought, well, what's more? And truthfully, the Montreal-Nashville game was great. I watched the third period. That was a really good game. Mm-hmm. They went, you know, Habs lose in a shootout. The Oklahoma City game was kind of dull. Like, yeah. they waxed them. They beat them by almost 20.
But didn't matter because soap opera trumped actual action.
So my takeaway from this is, if you are making a league for the owners, you are making a league for the past. One league, the NBA, is all about the fans. The NHL is all about, let's not let things get out of hand, embarrass anybody in a front office. Let's not have storylines. Let's just make it about the game. And it's so dull in comparison. Like, today, the first thing I did, because I went to see what happened between Durant and Westbrook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Couple thoughts here.
Okay.
First off, obviously, you and I are on the exact same page on this.
Yes.
And I've often said what the NHLPA needs to do is go, listen, guys, we need more soap operas. We need to win the offseason. No one is signing nine-year deals. Stamkos, you're going somewhere else. Tavares, you're going to tease. You're going to leave the island. Like, just you need to start doing these sorts of things to an extent, not as much as it is in the NBA, which, you know, has its own issues. So in that, we are in 100% agreement. And last night could have been so much more fun. My question is, I wonder, are we the exception in Canada?
You and I are?
Not just like, I do wonder, does the average fan, do they lament the lack of personality in hockey? Or do they appreciate that it's totally team first? Because sometimes I look at it through my own prism, and it's one of my flaws, because I've had a fairly good life. I'm pretty well balanced. I'm a happy person. So then I have this logic going, well, everyone should view it through my eyes because, hey, I woke up happy again. So I get confused when I hear hockey fans decry that NBA style and they prefer the more team and kind of boring. But I do wonder, do fans prefer... Sometimes I wonder what the fans want.
I think there is an old school kind of fan that prefers the game. Mm-hmm. But if people are honest with themselves, what people really like is storylines.
Yes.
You have to really love a game. This is the phrase we've used on the pod many times. If you are selling only the game, you are no longer selling enough.
Yeah.
That's not how entertainment works in 2017. And it's getting to be less and less. Mm-hmm. It's about the personalities, how they interact. Everything is the after show. The Hills After Show. Remember that? When they used to show that on MTV?
I remember the promo. I never watched it. But yes, the backstory needs to be as interesting as the game.
And maybe even more interesting, because if you want something to have a long tail, you have to talk. And the NBA has done the most amazing job of becoming a 12-month league. Mm-hmm. They're just fantastic.
Yep.
So I looked at that last night and I thought, you have two great personality-rooted, star player-rooted, real good old-fashioned anger here. And one league runs from it, and one league runs towards it. And who's the one who's more interested? Well, I would say the ones who run towards it.
Yep. I agree. And it's a great point. And there isn't that sort of rivalry in any sport now that Bautista is unemployed, in terms of just like two players that don't like each other.
And yeah, you're thinking of the Rougned Odor.
The Rougned Odor, Bautista versus O'Day, Bautista versus Baltimore, Bautista versus the Baltimore ownership, Bautista versus every umpire, especially the home plate ones. You know,
he's starting to get the incredible Hulk feel humility, to him, right?
Bautista versus his own correct perspective of his financial worth, onwards and onwards. I miss Jose Bautista.
That's a lot of verses.
Yeah.
That's a good nickname for him.
Yeah, versus.
Versus.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed by that. And the irony was, just to put a button on the end of this, is the hockey game was much better.
Yeah.
The hockey game as a game was much better.
But yet the next morning, all you wanted to see was, what were the quotes in OKC Golden State?
I see on Twitter they're saying, check out the faces on Durant and Steph Curry as Westbrook tries to get a triple-double. Yeah. Well, you know what I did? I clicked on it.
Yeah, of course. 100%. Just like, what does Honey Boo Boo look like now? It'll shock you. Well, okay, I'll click on it. Hey, there's no photo. Okay, next. Okay, that's not her. Okay, wait. Loading an ad. Next. Okay, wait. It's still coming up. Oh, wait. The photographer was still running. Check out what this athlete looks like. Well, maybe I should. Anyway.
Do you have anything you want to get to before we do the new hit sensation, ..
One quick thing.
Sure.
Is there anything going to be more awkward this weekend in sports? Or, no, what was more awkward in the last 48 hours than Sean McDermott going, hey, Tyrod, you're starting for us again. Go team. I wish I was in the room for that conversation. And more importantly, I wish I was in the room with Tyrod Taylor whenever he spoke to his closest friend or family member after he had left One Bills Drive.
Okay. More disrespected NFL quarterback, mm-hmm. Tyrod Taylor or Kirk Cousins?
Ooh, it's a good one, because all of us love to blank all over Cousins, sometimes rightfully.
And he's had a hell of a lot of good games. There's guys who have gotten some big contracts with a lot shorter resume than Kirk Cousins.
It is true. Like, when you look at,
he's been franchised, what now, about 14 consecutive seasons?
Which would be an NFL record. That's a good question.
Tyrod Taylor hasn't really done anything.
No,
he was okay this year. He wasn't great. He was okay. So yanking him, putting him back in, while I think that's more outwardly embarrassing,
yeah.
Kirk Cousins continues to play well or better mm-hmm. and get kicked around by his own franchise.
Yeah, that is true.
I'm going to go with Cousins. So here's a power ranking for you. Who is the most maligned NFL quarterback?
Well, does Kaepernick count?
No, because he's not in the NFL. But that would be the obvious answer.
Well, Blake Bortles, but he deserves it.
Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler has to be number one, but he stinks, though.
He does stink.
So
is Bortles.
Right.
But here's the thing. Bortles stinks, and the rest of his team is good. Cutler stinks, and the rest of his team is, it's fine.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Kirk Cousins just because of the unfairness of it, because I just think that he's a good quarterback
yep.
in a league that's desperate for quarterbacks. And yeah. for some reason, he always gets the shaft from the Redskins.
One of these days, I'm going to about NFL quarterbacks, because Chuck Klosterman and Bill Simmons were talking about this. It might be the greatest mystery in North American sports, the lack of good quarterbacks, considering all the rules have been set up to help the quarterback. I want to go back and I'm going to look at the NFL draft preview. 1990, 95, 2000, 2005, you get it. And all I'm going to do is look at the average weight, size, and speed of the defensive ends mm-hmm. in football. Because there has to be, I want to see the reasons why. And it has to be all the other defensive guys have gotten much faster.
You look at the old tapes, like old Super Bowls and stuff, and guys who are considered like elite pass rushers.
Yeah.
Oh, he's breaking free. He's rushing. And he takes the quarterback down.
Yeah.
Now you get this split second reaction off the line. The three-step drop has become almost like you're hanging on the ball too long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a necessary evil. The whole five-step. They used to teach a seven-step drop. That was when defensive ends were running a 5-3-40.
Right. The seven-step drop seems like such a quaint notion, doesn't it?
It really is. Go back to... I miss the early 90s.
Just, you know what? Just run out of the shotgun.
Yeah.
Just be shotgun all the time. So, I've got some questions for you.
Yep.
We can do dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, we'll do dot, dot, dot. Then we'll do our top five.
Okay, because I did want to... okay. So the idea here is I just give it a couple brief morsels, just random observations, and then Kaz decides which one he actually wants to discuss further. Okay.
Yep.
Connor Brown is like French fries, the side that goes with everything.
Okay, yep.
Ever get torn when a good story happens to a team you don't like? Brock Besser is on fire. But he plays for the Canucks. Dot, dot, dot. Vancouver has a better record than Washington or Pittsburgh. Who saw that coming? Is it just me, or does Matt Devlin sound better this year? November is like preseason for winter. Pascal Siakam needs a nickname. I suggest the Charger. You know how phone charger?
Yep.
The Charger. And finally, Matt's yearly celebration of American Thanksgiving is inspirational. Dot, dot, dot.
I'm not going to pick that one because you thought I was. I like the Connor Brown French fries one.
Okay.
Because no matter what line he's on, the next day you never hear Connor Brown hurt that line.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, if Connor Brown gets replaced, it's because he's getting replaced by, the Nylanders or the Marners. He's not getting replaced for Soshnikov. So, yeah, he absolutely is French fries.
What I love about French fries is he's like Connor Brown. You can dress it up or dress it down. If you put it with McDonald's, I had McDonald's last night. I had French fries and 10 McNuggets. You know what that was? That was a fourth line meal.
Yeah.
That was just a good old fashioned.
That's a delicious fourth line meal.
It was so terrific. When I mentioned to my wife, why don't we go get McDonald's? It's like she ran to the car. Honey, put your shoes on. You're going to need them. It's
no
cold.
Time for shoes.
But if you put it next to steak.
Yep.
Then that you could serve it up in a fancy restaurant.
Steak and frites.
Steak frites.
Which I hate the word frites. It's a French fry, okay? And I know I'm fancy pantsy with restaurants. It's French fries.
French fries play up and down the food lineup just like Connor Brown does. Yep. And nobody ever says after a meal with French fries, you know what wrecked it?
The French fries.
There you
Never.
Go.
Never. It's a great point. If you're in Pittsburgh, you put them in with your sandwich or your burger. French fries.
What's that place called? The Pimenti Brothers?
Yeah.
And they do those fancy, are they like baked sandwiches or fried sandwiches?
Yeah.
You had one with Mike Richards, right?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Matt's laughing because I'm going to tell this story. So as part of TSN 1050, we all went to the draft that was being held in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
You were producing the morning show at the time.
I sure was.
I was co-hosting the afternoon drive.
Yep.
And your job was unofficial watchdog over Mike Richards.
Yeah, I was not a very good watchdog.
You did a bad job.
No.
Richards walked onto the draft floor with a draft. With he had a beer in his hand.
Like, everyone is working because we only had to do one show. We got there Thursday night, and then we did one show Friday, and then we didn't leave until, I think, Saturday night or Sunday morning. And, Michael's wandering around the draft while everyone's working with a pint. It was hilarious.
So I saw you guys roll into the Pimenti brothers. I believe it was the Saturday afternoon when we were leaving. And the two of you looked like the final reel of a Vietnam movie.
We did it up on Friday. Like, here's the thing. Okay, I'll tell this quick. The week or so leading up to the draft, during the commercial breaks, like just doing the regular morning show, we would spend every commercial break looking at every restaurant in Pittsburgh. And we would be looking at the menus. I'd be like, Mike, check.
You were going over your scouting reports. Yeah. It's just you were scouting restaurants. This
was
a scouting report.
Was Morgan Riley drafted that year? I don't know. But all we were doing was looking at the wine lists. So the Friday night was that. But the best was the Thursday night, which was like, God, we were out late. And we had to do the show the next morning at 5:30. We were at this one bar. And there was these two young girls playing acoustic guitar. And they were really good. And of course, then we were watching them. And we started hanging out with their mom. And we eventually invited the girls to come and do the show the next day. I never thought they would show up, but they did. So the final segment of the Mike Richards Morning Show draft preview special was two blondes with their acoustic guitars singing original songs. Not even... They weren't doing Sounds of Silence. They did original songs. And I remember looking going, I did a good job today. Onwards and upwards.
So there's that.
There's that. Another one I want to do from your ..
Oh, okay.
Pascal Siakam. He needs a nickname.
The Charger, right? The Charger. Like, you look at your phone, you're down to about 10%. Sometimes your offense is like that, or your defense. And Dwayne Casey says, we need the Charger. So you plug in Pascal Siakam and good things happen.
Yep.
It's ironic that the other day we were talking about CJ Miles versus EJ Anunoby. OG Anunoby. My apologies. And now it feels like it's going to be Siakam or JV. They got a lot of options on that team. There's only 12 guys.
Yeah,
but
get Ibaka to the bench, even though they just signed him to that deal. He didn't look good last night against the Knicks.
He looked really bad.
Siakam, he just looks great. And the question I always have is, everyone talks about his not just his athleticism, but his energy. And he's always running up and down. And I don't want to be old-timey sports fan. Why aren't they all doing that? But what is it about Siakam where he does that more than other young players?
You hear DeMar DeRozan talking about him. By the way, shout out to DeMar for being Eastern Conference Player of the Week. This might be the best he's ever played as a Raptor
Except for the second half against the Knicks where he went 0-for-3 and didn't score a point. But
yeah, no, fair. But yeah. It was bound to happen.
He's been great.
He has been fantastic. But even he was doing that sort of you chuckle and shake your head. Like, the kid never slows down.
Yeah.
He plays 100% every single play. And he makes plays all over the court. Defensive play. Next thing you know, he's part of the rush and he's getting the tap in on the other end. He is so much fun to watch. And this to me is like one of Masai's greatest accomplishments. Because did Pascal Siakam not feel like a total zero pick at the time?
Yes.
Like, there's a million guys who get drafted just like him and they play 44 games and wind up in Europe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And look what Masai Ujiri's done. And I don't know how much of his relationship, obviously, with the Giants of Africa, or Basketball Without Borders, OG Anunoby, roots in Africa. Pascal Siakam, roots in Africa. Even re-signing Serge Ibaka, roots in Africa.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you look at the international makeup of this team.
Yeah.
And you have Jakob Poeltl, who's from Australia.
Austria.
Austria, sorry. What is with my brain today?
It's Gruner Veltliner versus Shiraz.
Oh, okay, thank you. By the way, can you filibuster for a minute? I've got some rice on the stove.
Yeah,
go
do what you got to do.
Okay, hang on. So you filibuster.
Yeah,
I'm
going to filibuster for a quick second. By the way, we're going to do listener questions. We've got our top five. And a shout out to Buffalo Phil. We won't have time for it today, but he put together a thing called Barry's Percentages in honor of Jerry's Percentages, but Barry White. And he threw us a really good list of options. I promise we'll get to that on Monday because there's some fun stuff. And yes, for people who don't know, Jakob Poeltl's from Austria. And when you think of Austria, you think of Gruner Veltliner, you think of Riesling, you think of your aromatic whites, and versus Australia, where you're going to think of your bigger, more meaty reds like your Shiraz and your Cabernet.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. The rice is looking good.
Nice.
I've cooked for the family today.
Oh, look at you. Providing for the family.
Thank you. I'm the hunter and gatherer and boiler of things.
You're hunting rice. We're hunting rice.
Rice season. Pilaf season.
Oh, good on you. Rice season. Pilaf season. Pilaf season. Pilaf season.
Kaboom. It took me years to learn how to cook rice.
Rice is sneaky hard.
Sneaky difficult.
Sneaky hard.
Yeah. Get it? You have to get the right amount of water, yeah. and you have to boil it just the right amount of time off the top. It took really, like, my rice for years was terrible.
Yeah.
I kind of took inspiration from you. We'll get into the top five after this, but I just want to point this out, Matt.
Yeah.
I was thinking about how you love wine and you learned more about it.
Yeah.
And I should, like, I love food. I decided to take cooking lessons because you became a sommelier.
You're not doing that. First off, that's fantastic. Please tell me you're not doing that right now when you were on, you know, the PTA and before the show started, you were writing emails because there was issues with Christmas trees or wreaths or something.
That's true, actually. We're a little bit low on our Christmas tree distribution this year, and tomorrow's the last day, so we have a last-minute push.
Uh-huh.
If anybody needs a wreath or a poinsettia, drop me a note on Twitter, and I'll hook you up.
There it is. So you got to use the. That's what you got to use the podcast for.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I could use this podcast, and all it would do is get us less listeners.
Yeah.
Who don't want to be sold poinsettias mm-hmm. from St. Vincent de Paul. So, yes, this will be in the new year.
Yes.
And hopefully it'll be a less hectic time.
That's great. Yeah, that's great that you're doing lessons. You know, something I love. So I'm like, okay, let's learn about why something tastes like it should.
Cause you are inspirational on so many levels. And so here is your top five.
Yeah.
Not just an inspiration, but an editorial driver of this show.
Well, I want to hear your list as well because SNL.
I didn't come up with one.
Oh, okay.
I totally forgot.
Okay.
I did. I totally forgot.
Top five most interesting Saturday Night Live hosts. You're like, whoa, that guy, that girl hosted? What was that all about? A couple, like, and this was in honor of Chance the Rapper. His hockey sketch was great. So, like, Nancy Kerrigan didn't make the list, but that one seemed odd. You know what's one also that didn't make the list? You know who hosted on a couple occasions? Charlton Heston. I totally forgot Charlton Heston. Dana Carvey actually said Charlton Heston was one of his favorite guest hosts. You just don't think about it because you think like just really right-wing, gun-loving guy. Doesn't seem to fit with SNL. Even
action
he was a great
hero, yeah, biblical just, epics. You don't think of him as doing sketch.
Yeah. So here's my list. Number five from 1996, presidential candidate, super rich fella, Steve Forbes. And what made it interesting was Steve Forbes, when he was on, the musical guest, Rage Against the Machine. And Rage Against the Machine, they attempted to protest Forbes hosting the gig, so they had inverted U.S. flags on their amplifiers, which led the producers to cut the performance. Not two songs, they were just allowed one. Steve Forbes at number five. Just
that's
shocking
a good one. That's
that
a good one.
At number four, George Steinbrenner. Maybe because in the one sketch where he plays like a owner of some sort of store and one guy keeps screwing up, but he can't fire him. He says, it's not my nature. Where is it written? If you don't get results in people, you fire them. Only a jackass runs his business that way. That was in 1990.
How many times did he fired Billy Martin by then?
Oh, at least three or four times. This was before they went on the run with Jeter and everyone. And, you know, this was in 1990 when the Jays were the better team. Number three, Andrew Dice Clay. That was a controversial one. And we saw Nora Dunn. She wouldn't do the show. Lorne Michaels was being interviewed all over the place, like CNN and 60 Minutes and stuff like that, about the controversial choice to have Andrew Dice Clay host the show. And number two, this one is interesting because this was the highest rated show of 2010. And this episode won an Emmy because of an 88-year-old woman who the only reason she made it was because Facebook wanted her to. Betty White. I mean, like when you put that all together, you don't expect 88-year-old woman pushed by Facebook and it's the highest rated show.
I'd forgotten about that campaign. Yeah. That was an early example of how crowdsourcing and social media could get impact on the world of mainstream media.
Yep. And at number one, this is the only time this ever happened, partially because Nick Nolte was incredibly hungover, but the only time a cast member was so big he could host the show himself, Eddie Murphy, a member of the cast, and he hosted back in season 8, 1982. And during the cold open, many members of the cast were upset because he said, live from New York, it's the Eddie Murphy show. Only time that has ever happened.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that on a lot of levels. So was it supposed to be Nick Nolte, but then he was too loaded to do it?
Yeah, he was like a club. What was the famous Club 54?
Club 54. Studio 54.
Studio 54. Thank you. I believe it was there. And he was so hungover that last minute just Eddie Murphy's like, eh, they just decided you host the show.
And this would have been right around 48 hours. Mm-hmm. So they would, exactly they starred together. So there was a natural combination there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And he said live from New York, it's the Eddie Murphy show.
Yep.
I don't like that. Do you like that?
He was, but remember, Eddie Murphy would have been like 21 years old, drunk with power. I don't like it, but I get why he did it.
You got to admit, though, he was a superstar. Has anyone ever left that show and been bigger than Eddie Murphy?
Probably not.
Think about the early 80s, right around the time of Delirious and Raw, Beverly Hills Cop,
Trading Places.
Yeah. He was brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
For one. But just a superstar, almost Michael Jackson-esque in terms of how hot he was, at least in North America.
And by the way, at such a young age, he was like 20, 21 when this was starting to happen.
I was thinking about Eddie Murphy the other day and his great, like the I'm Gumby, damn it, and Tyrone Green, the street poet, Kill My Landlord.
Yeah.
He had so many. In fact, maybe that's a good one to do somewhere down the road is your top five Eddie Murphy performances.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's an easy list to bet. It's hard because you gotta start whittling. So yeah, my top five most interesting Saturday Night Live hosts.
Is he underrated?
Eddie Murphy, he's underrated. He's forgotten, which makes him underrated because he's done so many bad movies. And then there was the scandal with him picking up maybe the hooker that he said he was just driving home. I believe she was transsexual. There was at the 40th anniversary of SNL. He didn't perform. He was going to perform in a sketch or two, and he did nothing. Like, he just, you know, he felt underused. And so, yeah, he is a little bit. Like, I think so. Yeah.
I think so, because he was so funny and so huge. And when we talk about the great comics of all time, I'm more inclined to talk about Chris Rock than I am Eddie Murphy. But maybe I'm wrong to do that. And that's not a knock on Chris Rock, who I think is probably the best stand-up of our generation. But
the difference
he's
is
never accomplished, like, not even close.
In movies, nothing. 95% of all of Chris Rock's movies were bad. And he was
Except for CB4, which is pretty awesome.
Except for CB4, but he has like a very small role in CB4. But Eddie Murphy carried films. You know, you know what? I think with Eddie Murphy. So yeah, I would put Eddie Murphy higher than Chris Rock if you just do the entire canon of their work.
All right. Well, anyway, so here's my observations. I thought you put together a really good list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost more interested in the... I don't like the stunt booking because it almost never really works out and the comedy suffers.
Yep.
Like, it's funny for about a minute that somebody like that would do SNL.
Novelty is hard to keep going for 90 minutes. And what you find, though, and I went back and did a little research on this. Do you know Donald Pleasance once hosted Saturday Night Live?
I did know that, actually.
And I went back and looked at it, not online, because you can't see any SNL sketches in Canada, because every time you do, NBC and Hulu gives you a big middle finger.
Yeah, but the geo-gating on SNL is so furious. Why does Global not have better distribution on that?
I would pay so much money if I had a website where I could watch any SNL sketch whenever I wanted to. But what they used to do with the stunt cast guest hosts, they would hide them. They'd be in fewer sketches, and they'd find a way to hide them like they did with Donald Pleasance.
But it always feels like, it's like when you invite somebody to dinner that nobody likes, and you're just trying your best to sort of keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
There's that awkward tension as everyone tries to be extra pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it when they put on actors who are serious, and they turn out to be really good. Kind of the Charlton Heston factor that you were talking about. I think John Hamm, to me, is the best surprise, the most fun, pleasant surprise, because I had no idea he was funny.
And you know why? Because he's good looking. And
he's in the bubble.
Yeah.
He lives in the bubble. He's in the bubble.
You do not cook catfish with Gatorade. Okay, this is 30 Rock references. These are all 30 Rock references. And this goes to another topic. Because he's really good looking and he was on Mad Men.
And Don Draper is such a serious character.
Yeah.
And he wasn't just funny. Like, he's hilarious. Like, he's just below Baldwin and Walken as the sort of great actor slash could have been a cast member.
You know who's like that? You know who's like that as well, who's knocked out of the park twice? Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, he's really good.
Serious actor, really good looking. He is funny.
And Justin Timberlake, too.
Oh, of course.
Well, Timberlake's been awesome.
Timberlake's in a whole other level. I mean, Timberlake eventually will be hosting the Oscars.
Has he not yet?
No, it's going to happen. He will. I mean, Kimmel's got it this year. And what an easy year to host the Oscars. I mean, you know, so simple, you know, easy topical jokes that won't upset anyone in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's a good point. Should we do some listener questions before we wrap up?
Yeah, we got about
eight. And I can serve you some brown rice before you go.
That's really not how I'm going.
I think it's good. I cooked it with catfish and Gatorade, Matt. It's a personal specialty.
I have Thanksgiving meal. You enjoy your...
We have to talk at least a little bit about that. You didn't take the bait on my dot, 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 but we should talk about your obsession with American Thanksgiving.
I have a friend of mine, Bill Eppner's family. His mother is from Wisconsin, and she always would do a big Thanksgiving meal and invited her sons and some of their friends. And it was great because in university days, you know, you just... What did you do on Wednesday night? Hey, let's drink because Thursday's a day off because it's American Thanksgiving. So we'd be hungover and watch football and have Thanksgiving meals. And that was in the mid-90s. And we're still doing it in 2017.
God, I want turkey right now so bad. I am so envious.
Yeah.
All right. So some listener questions, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe has an interesting question. Joe_17. I have a question for Bob and Matt. You two are my go-to for tipping etiquette, and I saw something that confused me while traveling yesterday. At the end of my flight, I saw a guy tip the flight attendant $10. Is tipping expected on flights? And the interesting thing is my girlfriend, who was a flight attendant for so long, she actually chimed in, and her thought was, it's never expected, and whenever it happened, she would always refuse, but if someone really, you know, she would take the money. And Amy has from time to time tipped the flight attendant. And my answer to that is, if you keep asking for food, especially if you keep asking for wine, and they keep plying you with the little mini bottles of wine, throw them a tip.
I don't disagree with the idea of the tipping. I will say this, though. How did the service industry, particularly the food service industry, how did that corner the market on tipping? Because anytime you interact with someone in a shop, they're helping you out. Like, what do they really do? Like, I know it goes to the cooks and the dishwashers, and I know it's spread around, but isn't that kind of true of every service you use? Mm-hmm. There's lots of people there who help to get you what you're looking for. What is it about food that we feel we have to give extra money on top of the price versus every other service that you could procure?
Bob, it's a fantastic question, and now we're going down this angle.
Okay, are we going down the rabbit hole on this one?
Yeah, we're going down. Okay. By the way, to the other listener questions and to Buffalo Phil, we will get to it next week. So, Adam Carolla once brought up a really good point. When you go to like Rona or Home Hardware and these places, and someone is helping you and they're helping to lift, you know, the barbecue and helping to load it in your car, you don't tip them. But the blonde waitress the blonde hostess with 0% body fat working at Earl's, and all she did was open an expensive bottle of Napa Cab because you're some sort of douchebag Bay Street baller and you know the name Silver Oak, and it's a $140 bottle, so you throw her a 30. She did almost nothing, and she got a $30 tip. Yet the person at Home Hardware doesn't get a dime.
So you're working in a shoe shop, and you've got to help somebody try on their shoes on and off. They don't really help you with the shoes the way they used to, but when we were growing up, they would actually help you put the shoe on.
Yes, they were
the old Al Bundy factor.
They were right in proximity of your socks and your toes.
So isn't that a much more tippable gig?
Yes.
What about a good bus driver?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Or how about this? Even in the restaurant industry, you know what I feel bad for?
Hmm.
Anyone who works at a breakfast place, like a diner. Because what are they doing? A, they're calling you hun, and they're refilling your coffee, and they're asking if you need another free refill of orange juice. But because you don't order booze, and because flapjacks are cheap, even if you leave a 30% tip, that's $6.
That's a good point about breakfast. Is breakfast is traditionally a cheap meal.
Yes.
And the serving staff works harder during breakfast than they do the other meals.
Yep.
It's all backwards.
Yep.
I guess the balancing thing is brunch, because brunch is overpriced.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter. Not in a place of a brunch place. Like a good old-fashioned breakfast spot, you know, where you can get eggs over easy and a pair of toast.
Yeah.
You're right, Matt.
Yeah.
See, this question to me inspires not the is it okay to tip a flight attendant?
Yeah.
Because by the criterion laid out, of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's why do we only do it
yeah.
with food?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And cabs.
Yep, we do it with cabs. And the thing is, you should tip a cabbie before, because if you leave good, maybe then they'll, you know, be safe. Actually, but not too safe. There's nothing worse. It's so funny. God, we're now going down a different rabbit hole. I want cabs to be safe when I'm walking on the street or when I'm driving. But when I'm in the back of a cab and the cabbie slows down so they don't run the red, I'm always thinking, what are you doing? You're a cab. Get me to my place quicker. Run that red.
All right. Since we're going down the rabbit hole, let's go a little further. One more rung down. Scariest cab you've ever been in.
Ooh, that's easy. It was 1991. I was in Barbados. It was me and my cousin, Laura. And it was at night. We're coming back from a bar, and we didn't say anything. We just looked at each other and we sort of huddled up because he was just flying and, you know, there was no rules to the road and he was hitting parts of twigs and trees and limbs and of branches. That would be it for me.
That's a pretty scary one.
Yeah.
Was there booze involved?
On him, I have no idea.
Right. On you?
Yeah. But I mean, I was still cognizant enough.
Right. But you weren't drunk enough to feel good about it.
No. Oh, no, right. No. It probably sobered me up. And the other real quick one, I remember one time, the first time, the only time I was in L.A., I was in the back seat and the cab was turning left. And you go to L.A. all the time. Yep. Some of those roads, there's a lot of lanes. And the cabbie decided to put his seatbelt on right before he turned left. And I remember thinking, why now are you worried about safety? What are you about to do where you feel a seatbelt is necessary?
To go back to it, that's the flight attendant factor. I never get nervous until I see the flight attendants get nervous.
Yeah.
I'm not a great flyer. I'm not a bad flyer, but I'm not a great one.
Yeah.
Some people are casual about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very aware of where I am at all times. Not afraid, just aware.
Mm-hmm.
But I also figure like there's a lot of people who are pretty calm. So I'll roll with that. But if the people who are supposed to be calm don't look calm, red flag.
Oh, yeah. There was a famous story about a flight, South Korean airline, where they thought the plane was crashing and all the flight attendants were in tears and were panicked. Now, everything was fine with the plane, but oh, my God. God, those would have been just a terrifying point.
By the way, I mentioned I'm going to Whistler next week, right? So this is really feathering
Are you in the small planes? When you look
No.
When you're in the small plane and you look to your left and you don't see sky, you see mountain and you're like, ooh, could we just go higher, please? Just go above where the rocks are.
Most dangerous cab I was ever in was in Philadelphia. It was at the All-Star game. And I got into the cab. There was a hole in the floor of the cab so you could see the highway underneath it. And the cab driver had like one of those, you know, those things that help you breathe, like you have a hole in your throat. And then there's like a breathing thing that helps the guy out.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought there's a hole in the guy's throat and in the bottom of the cab. And I don't feel quite as confident in this situation as I might otherwise. And he was driving real fast. And we were going over a bridge, and I remembered thinking, this feels like Thelma and Louise-ish right now.
Yeah, and bridges are just... they add
terrifying.
Yeah, they are. It's weird because there's walls on, or, you know, guards on each side. But yeah, bridges are terrifying.
Do we have time for any more questions?
No.
I feel like we should at least honor one.
No.
Can we rapid fire?
No, we don't have time.
Okay.
But to Scriz, Matt Beardley, and Susan, all your questions will be saved and we will get to them. I promise.
What's the best matchup today?
Best matchup today is me versus Pumpkin Pie.
Ooh, I like Pumpkin Pie's really, chances, though.
It's really Detroit versus Minnesota, but that's mostly because of the backdrop of there's no more Aaron Rodgers. So it's like, you're going to get to win the division this year. It's like being the valedictorian of summer school.
Every single Dallas game now is must-see TV because I am convinced with every Dallas loss, we are closer and closer to Jerry Jones finding a way to crowbar Roger Goodell out of his position.
Oh. That is a good point.
So it just, nothing says funny like angry Texas billionaires.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. Bob, I will see you on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. Good luck with your tree drive at your school. And you have a good weekend, Bob.
You too, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.